we will continue our discussion of housing with the home buying process. Yeah, it's not for the faint of heart. There's an entire industry out there, and they just love to shepherd you through the process. And a lot of people just don't know. They just don't understand what's happening to them. So we'll do our best to help you, but it's a daunting task. So let's get started on slide 19. Determine your home ownership needs. Determine how much you can afford. Well, the best way to do this is to get pre-qualified. Go see a mortgage broker that you have a recommendation for, or check out your bank or credit union or another mortgage company, and they will pre-qualify you. This is their job. They will, as we said, basically do your cash flow statement and your net worth statement and look at your income and say, well, this is how much we believe you we can lend you. So now you have an idea of how much you can buy. They'll want to know where the down payment is. They're going to want to see the accounts. Where's the down payment? What's your ability to make the payments? What's coming in? What's going out? What's your cash flow statement? The first house you buy, yes, you might decide that it's not exactly what you want, and as you move to a second or third home, you can include more of the features you want. And certainly you're going to want to look at the condition of the home, right? Slide number 20. Finding and evaluating a property to purchase. Select the location. Be very aware of the zoning laws, the conditions, codes, and restrictions. Some places, Rancho Bernardo, you can't even park your own RV in your driveway. I don't know about that, folks. School systems are very important for people who have children. Poway, in our area, is considered a very good school district, and as such, the houses are priced accordingly. There was one school district in Connecticut, I think it was, that had just unbelievable test scores, and the houses were bid up to outrageous prices. And then it was found that the teachers and the principals were all exactly, they were cheating on the exams, making the students look like they were doing better than they did. Oh boy. Should you use a real estate agent? Well, they present your offer, negotiate the price, assist you in obtaining financing, represent you at the closing, and stab you in the back if you're not careful. Okay, I told you by the end of the semester I was going to insult everybody. This isn't to say that there's one or two good real estate agents out there, folks. There are. You got to just get a good referral. And if any real estate agents want to do battle with me, I'd be happy to pull out the research from a badly named book, but a brilliantly written book. It's called Freakonomics, if you can believe that. But this guy is an economist who basically uses great research. I mean, he just digs into these areas where the conventional wisdom is often wrong, and he just uncovered some great relationships. For example, the one having to do with real estate, is that real estate agents will sell your house for a certain amount of money, and they get a commission off of that. We'll discuss the commission later on. But when they're selling their own house, they will sell it for the price that they would have gotten for your house, plus then some. They'll sell it for more than what they sell your house for. Well, why? Well, it is that there are certain numbers that we could run through, but essentially, they don't get paid until the house sells, when they represent you or represent a client. So they're doing their best to get a sale. But when they're selling their own house, exactly, they're not getting a commission. what they're doing is they're getting the money from the sale of the house. So they're willing to wait a little longer. And when this research came out, the real estate agents were just, livid. But he had the data to back him up. In general, the real estate agents, when they sell their own house, the house will be on the market longer, and they'll get more money. They'll sell for a higher price. So, are you going to get a good referral? Good. I got the name of a couple of people who in the South Bay who are very honest. One's a pit bull, and she's great. And the other one is kind of a, he's great, he's really relaxed and very friendly, and I said to him once, I said, how do you deal with all this dishonesty in this industry? And he said, well, some people in the industry are very, very honest, and some people are not so honest. I mean, he just takes it very in stride. You could obtain an appraisal beforehand, but it's going to happen anyway. The bank, the lending institution, is not going to allow the loan to happen without an appraisal to make sure that the house is worth what you're paying. And should you conduct a home inspection? Well, the book and many others recommend this, but my experience and people who I trust have told me that many of these home inspectors really are not that good. They're just not worth the money you spend for them. I would rather contact a contractor or somebody who actually does work and has to redo floors and roofs and basements and whatever, and ask them to inspect my home. Because I'll tell you, we were completely... My wife and I completely blindsided by a home inspection that this one gentleman did. Totally ridiculous. Just totally ridiculous. And charged us a ton of money to do it. I couldn't believe it. So you decide. Slide number 21. Check the neighborhood and recent transactions to determine whether or not you're actually paying a good deal. Your real estate agent should help you with that, but we're going to show you an example of Zillow, and there's another one called Trulia that are not the best tools. They're not they're not fantastic, but they're pretty good, and they allow you to check out what's going on. The data's often a little old. The real estate agents hate these people and do their best to make sure that they don't get the right data. But it helps. And also you can just ride around. I like to ride around on my bicycle and just see what things are selling for. Remember that you can go with the agent who is selling the house, or you can get your own agent, a buyer's agent. But just remember that the agents work for the seller. The seller normally will be the one who's paying the commission. So always keep this in mind. You will hear an agent tell you, ooh, ooh, ooh. You should always use an agent when you're buying because the seller pays the commission. But that same agent will turn around to a potential seller and say, ooh, ooh, ooh. You should always use an agent when you're selling because the price of the commission is built into the price of the house. Now, I heard this from the same agent on two different occasions. And I just grinned and I was about ready to say, but didn't you say, I didn't do it. I just didn't do it because she was a friend of my wife and I didn't want to. Anyway, is it a seller or a buyer's market? Well, it depends who you talk to right now. For a few years, it was certainly a buyer's market. If you could qualify for the loan, if you could come up with a down payment because prices had fallen so far. But now, supposedly, prices are getting tighter, but again, as we said in the previous presentation, I'm not buying it. I don't know if this is it, if this is the beginning of another real estate bonanza. I ain't buying it. What is earnest money? Well, we used to call this a down payment, but it's not the down payment. It's something completely different. It's $2,000, $3,000 to $5,000 that you put down towards the purchase of the home just to tell the seller that, yes, this is the house I want to buy. Don't try to sell it to somebody else. And what you have to be careful is this money could disappear if, for example, you don't are not able to obtain financing, or if the sale if you can't buy this house unless you can sell your own house. So what you should write into the selling agreement, the sales agreement, and again, a good agent will help you do this, are what are called contingency clauses. Isn't that a great name, contingency? I love it the way it sounds when you say it. You can feel your throat vibrate, contingency. And you can say, you know what, I'm going to put $5,000 down. I want to buy this house, but if I can't obtain financing, you did get pre-qualified, didn't you? Or if I can't sell my own house, I want that $5,000 back. Because if you don't do that and you walk away from the transaction, they get to keep the earnest money. You understand? Yes. Be careful. Be careful. Make sure you've put in those contingencies, because you don't want to be out $4,000 or $5,000. Slide 22. Determine the amount of the down payment. If you have less than 20% down payment these days, they'll often ask you to pay what's called mortgage insurance. And we have a slide just devoted to this scam. I mean, this aspect of buying a home. Yeah. Apply and qualify for the mortgage, but you've already been pre-qualified, right? How many times have I said that? I don't know. Remember to be pre-qualified. And then you want to evaluate the points and the interest rates. And there's a little, there's a document and a commentary on the website about the buy down. The fewer amount of points you pay, the higher the interest rate, the more points you pay, the lower the interest rate. And 1 point is basically 1% of the loan. So as we said, if it's a $300,000 loan, 1 point would be $3,000. And that's just for the privilege of getting the loan, folks. It's a commission, so to speak. And you have to do your own trade-off, your own decision about whether you want to pay fewer points and a higher interest rate or more points and a lower interest rate. But when you take a look at the document, you'll see the trade-off. You'll see that in the long term, it's probably a good idea to buy down the interest rate and pay them more points. But you never know what's going to happen in the future. So many people say, pay the fewest number of points, get a higher interest rate. If interest rates go down, you do it again, right? And, of course, it's an eternal struggle. Also, on the assignment sheet, the last question asks you to evaluate, you know, what's going to happen if you do finance your home, and then you have all these closing costs, and how long will it take you to pay it off? The same kind of ideas. These are questions that everybody has to look at and decide on their own. Slide 23. Here we go. PMI, private mortgage insurance. Private mortgage insurance protects the lender from financial loss due to default on the loan. Whoa, wait a minute. Notice that it protects the lender. But who pays for it? Right, the borrower pays for it. What a scam. I mean, what a deal. This is usually required if the homeowner puts down less than 20% on the home. Now, I want you to remember this number. When the equity builds the 20%, so it's the same number, right? Either you put down 20% or the house has appreciated and you've been paying down the loan, so you own 20% of the house, right? So the $300,000 house, that would be $60,000. $60,000 of it is yours, $240,000 of it is the bank's. Isn't that nice of them? They own most of the house, but they let you live there. Once you hit 20%, the PMI, the private mortgage insurance, is supposed to end automatically. But do you think the lender's your house hit 20%, take the PMI? No, they don't want to get rid of it. It's protecting them, and you're paying for it. So you've got to petition them hey, look, house prices have gone up. My loan has gone down. I have 20% equity. Get rid of this thing. because they're not going to want to do it. Some borrowers avoid it by taking out two loans. They'll take an 80% first trust deed to fix, which we're going to discuss on the next slide. And then they'll take 10% HELOC and 10% down to 15% HELOC, 5% down. So they try to avoid private mortgage insurance as much as possible. As well, you should, because you're paying insurance for somebody else's protection. I don't like it. Slide number 24. All right, let's get down to tax here. Types of mortgages. For decades, the most prevalent type of mortgage, let's get the little magic cursor in here, was the conventional, also called fixed, fixed payment, first trust deed. But yeah, an adjustable could be a first trust deed, but a fully amortized, which is a fancy word of saying it's stretched out, fixed rate. You know what your payment was for 30 years. You can get them for 20, you can get them for 40 or 15. But 30 years became the norm. And they typically wanted you to put down 20%. But as housing prices started getting higher and higher and higher, maybe 10% or even 5%. As housing prices started to really accelerate in the late 70s, 1980s, 1990s, the adjustable rate mortgage became very popular. What's going on here? With a fixed rate mortgage, you know what your interest rate will be. If interest rates go down, oh well, you can always refinance. But if interest rates go up, you're protected. Well, the industry wanted to share in that risk of interest rates going up and created the adjustable rate mortgage. It usually has a cap, a maximum. Say you start out at 6%, it can only go up to 11%, a 5% cap. And it can only go up every 6 months or once a year, and only by a certain percentage, maybe 1% at a time. So there are some protections built in. But throughout the 1980s and 1990s, interest rates trended down. So people who bought these adjustable rate mortgages looked like geniuses. Plus, they started to come up with more creative ways of selling these things, with interest-only provisions, or what is called negative amortization. Huh? Negative amortization. That's a fancy word or phrase for saying your loan's not going down, your loan is going up. What? What kind of loan goes up? Well, it's called the option arm, the optional adjustable rate mortgage, and it became the darling of the industry during the run-up of 2002 to 2007. You see your neighbors and your friends making money hand over fist. Their houses appreciating 30%, 20% a year. Oh man, I gotta get me into one of these houses, but they're $500,000. They were only $200,000 a few years ago. How do I do it? Well, a friendly real estate agent with the cheap cigars and the leisure polyester suit tells you, we can get you into an option arm for $500,000. You can buy that house, and you only have to pay $1,600 a month. And you look at him and say, are you serious? Yeah, well, sure, we're serious. How much money do you make a year? $30,000. No, you don't make $30,000. Here, just write down here that you make $120,000. What? Yeah. They were called liar loans. No doc. No documentation. They didn't require you to show what your income was. What's the catch? Well, the catch is the loan should really be about $3,200 a month. What's going on with the extra $1,600? No problem. The loan is going up. That $1,600 that you would have paid, that extra $1,600, was being tacked on, was being put onto the loan. And so next year you might owe, $520,000. And you say to the mortgage broker, you say, well, that doesn't sound smart. And they say, what are you worried about? Housing prices are going up 20%. In 2 years, your house is going to be worth $700,000. What are you worried about? Oh, I guess that sounds okay. But also, it says here that next year I'm going to be paying $2,000 a month. Right. It's $1,600 for the first year. Next year, it's $2,000. And then the third year, it's $2,400, $2,500. And then in the fourth year, the loan resets, whatever that means, and becomes fully amortized, whatever that means, and now your mortgage is $3,300 or $3,400 a month in perpetuity for the rest of the loan. And you say, well, Mr. Loan Broker, I can afford $1,600, maybe $2,000, but I can't afford $3,400 a month. No problem! See, it's always no problem. We'll do it again. We'll write another option ARM. Lower your payments back down to $1,700. Besides, by that time your house will be worth $800,000. You could sell it. Folks, you might think I'm being ridiculous, but I'm not. This is what was going on, folks. And why were brokers selling these things? Well, it allowed people who weren't making a whole lot of money to buy houses that they had no business to buy. But as long as housing prices were going up, everybody was happy. Plus, the brokers made twice to four times the commission on these option ARMs than they did on the conventional loans. So if you don't have any scruples and you want to make a lot of money, this was a great place to do it. Why did they create these option ARMs? Well, they were created in the 1980s for people whose income was rising quickly. You just got out of medical school or graduated with an engineering degree or a law degree, or you're in business now. And the next few years, your income is going to rise fairly well. Yeah, these things made sense for a very small percentage of the population. But there were entire companies that were selling these things exclusively. I will never forget this presentation given by this sleaze. I mean, this guy, just unbelievable. He was bragging about that he had a Porsche and he had just bought a Lamborghini, and his next purchase was going to be a jet. That's what he told us. And he said, well, I don't tell people I'll shop around for the best loan. I tell them this is the best loan. Yeah, for him. For him. Exactly. And what we're going to see is these things blew up in people's faces. Because housing prices stopped going up. And they started going down and down and down. And then these mortgages didn't go away. They started resetting, and people were looking at a house that was not $500,000 anymore, but $300,000 or $260,000 or less, $225,000. And they just started defaulting, walking away, stop making their payments. There's a document on the website called Monthly Mortgage Resets, and we see how this train wreck was, the train fell off the tracks and just started destroying everything in its path, but just kept on going. Beware the option ARM. Have I scared you enough? Good, I hope so. And we'll wait till you see the presentation about what happened to the housing prices. That's not up there yet, but it will be. If you are a veteran, the VA has some tremendous loan programs. So you want to definitely talk to the VA about your opportunities. And then FHA, for many years, was not very useful in San Diego because their maximums were just too low. Same thing is true for the VA. The maximums were just too low for many people in San Diego. But my understanding is they have made them higher so that more people can qualify. FHA is for first-time home purchasers who don't necessarily have the best income but want to get into a home, and it can be very helpful. Slide number 25. The graduated payment loans started with conventionals but moved over to the option arm. It was a typical characteristic that just went crazy. It just became insane. But if you believe your income is expected to rise, you can talk to your loan broker, your mortgage company, your credit union, about graduated payments. Interest-only loans were yet another symptom of the sickness that we all thought housing prices would never go down. I love the way they abbreviate these. IO loans. Yeah, right. IO, interest only. If you pay interest, at least it's not as bad as the option arm, right, where the negative amortization, the loan is going up, not down. Balloon payments. Balloon, what are these? Well, they're actually very useful for people who know that they're going to be leaving San Diego in 3 or 5 years or 7 years. Because what you can do is go to your loan broker and say, look, I'd like a 30 due in 7, 30 due in 5. And they'll know exactly what you're talking about. Sometimes you'll see 30/7, 30/5 in the advertisements. And what they're going to do is they're going to give you a 30-year loan, but at the end of 7 years or at the end of 5 years, you have to pay the whole loan off in one lump sum, the balloon payment. Well, people aren't going to do that. What are they going to do? Well, they're either going to refinance before then, or they're going to sell the house and move to another part of the country. And this is typical for people who say you're in the Navy and you know I'm going to be assigned here for 3 years, but then we're moving to Bremerton Norfolk in Virginia. So you can ask your broker for a 30 due in 7, 30 due in 5, and what happens is they will give you a better interest rate. What's your reward for taking this? Your interest rate will be lower because they know that they're getting their money a lot sooner. And it's a typical part of, as we'll see when we get to in a few more slides, the longer the money is out there, the higher the interest rate the lenders are going to require. Slide number 26. We discussed home equity lines of credit, a second mortgage, a second trust deed. And they can be very useful tools in case of emergencies and the like. The interest is normally tax deductible on Schedule A, but we saw that they can get us into trouble, especially if we deal with unscrupulous people. What is a reverse mortgage? You're going to see these advertised more and more as the baby boom generation ages. These are only available to you. I'm pretty sure that the age is still 62. They're probably going to raise it. But these are ways for people who've been in their house for a long time, the mortgage is paid off, are pretty darn close, and they can have a reverse mortgage where money is being sent to them as opposed to them making the payments. And they can use their equity in their home as a source of income. Now, you better be careful. Get a lawyer, get somebody who's really knowledgeable about these things, because there are sharks in the water. And there are horrible instances of companies, because remember, they love to play on the elderly. They have a tendency to, especially the traditionals, the tendency to be very loyal. So you got to be careful. There are just numerous types of scams. And one of the biggest scams is the next bullet, shared appreciation. We discussed the shared appreciation in the previous presentation, where the grandparents or the parents share in the appreciation. But the lender can do it too. The lender could say to you, the borrower, and say, hey, we're going to make you this loan, but we want to, if the price of the house goes up, the market value of the house goes up, we want to get paid for that. We want to be part of that. And you might go, oh, all right. But be careful, because there have been numerous instances where the lender has lowballed, it's called, appraised the value of the house much lower than it really is. And so they've instantly stole money from you. And these are rampant in the reverse mortgage industry. So just be very careful. Get a good lawyer to look over, or some other professional you trust. Look over the paperwork and make sure you're not getting screwed. Now, what's the cool part of a reverse mortgage? You can't get kicked out of your house. Or that's the way it's supposed to be. There's a link on the class website that discusses a situation where people have been kicked out of their house. But the idea is they're not allowed to foreclose on you until you go into the nursing home or until you die, or maybe you sell the house and move someplace else. So that's the cool part of reverse mortgages, but I think I've impressed upon you the need, and most of you young folks are nowhere near this situation, but you might have parents or grandparents who are, so be careful. And then we'll discuss refinancing in a bit. You want to refinance to get a better interest rate. Interest rates have gone down. You'll want to get a better interest rate. You don't want to keep paying 6% now that interest rates are 4 and the like. Slide number 27. Financing and mortgage fees. It used to be almost impossible to compare apples to apples when shopping for a loan. A lower interest rate was usually a come-on in exchange for being soaked with garbage fees. And those were the names, the names for the techniques that they used. It's a come on. These are garbage fees. And the loan applicants often were not made aware of these extra fees until the day of closing. They're looking at this document, which is this HUD, Housing and Urban Development 1 settlement document, with all these numbers on it, and they look at this and say, what's this $10,000 for loan distribution fee? What is that? You didn't tell me about the $10,000. Oh, that's the $10,000 loan distribution fee. Well, what is it? It's the $10,000 loan distribution fee. They won't tell you what it is. They're not telling you that they're going to charge you $10,000 to write a check. And you know, you're ready to close on this house, and you have to fight. And in some areas of the country, some states, it is just typical for you to bring a lawyer to the table when the day of closing or the day before closing. In California, no, but in some other states, that's because it's so rampant. But it is much easier and safer now because new rules forbid bait and switch maneuvers that used to be commonplace. You can see their best guess, and remember, things change every day, so and of course the most important thing is when does the house actually close, and that changes the numbers, so they'll show you what our best guess is, and then they'll actually compare it to what the actual price is. This is interesting how this came about, because in 2003, there was an effort to create a standardized method, and the industry shot it down. But after the 2007, 2008, and then subsequent crash, debacle in the home loan industry, the home loan reform advocates finally got their way. It takes a disaster before the industry will actually fess up to the problems that they've created, and they'll say, ooh, but we want to be flexible. We want to be able to flexibly charge our clients. So, yeah, Slide number 28. Should I have a large down payment? Should I pay off my mortgage early? Well, the truth is the two are the same question. And what you're asking yourself is, how much equity should I have in my house? How much of my house should I own? And how much should the bank own? Isn't that nice? The bank owns they're the ones who own the house. They just let you live there. But the real estate agent will say, no, don't make a large down payment. Don't pay off your mortgage early. You're going to buy a new house every 4 or 5 years, right? So that she can make another commission. The financial representative says, oh, no, you should invest the extra in a mutual fund so he can make another commission. I says, if you intend on staying in your house for more than a few years, if it's a long-term proposition for you, yes, pay down the mortgage, have a large down payment, make love, not loans. It used to be a virtue when people would pay off their mortgage. They'd have mortgage burning parties. It used to be something that we celebrated. And then it became something that was just
You stupid.
Yo, what is the matter with you? And you're going to hear different points of view, folks. I will never forget. This was in 2007, right? That was right before, you know, people were still clinging to the idea that it was just a pause in the housing, the run-up of housing, and it was about ready to charge ahead. And I was at this party, and some of these people were very well off, and they were just scathing in their pronouncements about my recommendation to pay off the mortgage. And I forget how we got on the topic, because they knew I teach this stuff. And you teach people to pay down their mortgage? What's the matter with you? What are you? That's ridiculous. You want to die with the biggest mortgage you can have. And I thought, are you serious? I mean, first of all, you don't know when you're going to die. That's the problem. You know, if you did know when you're going to die, you could write that last check to Vons and have it bounce after you pass on. But you don't know that. And the one gentleman was saying how they had just put an offer on a house that was on the market for $1.6 million, and they put a $1.2 million offer, and they were sure that in a couple of years this house was going to be $2 million. And I'm thinking, okay, you know, good luck, good luck. And then, you know what? Every time I see them now, I just smile. We never talked about it again. Never talked about it again, because 6 months later, it was evident that the housing market had fallen into a funk. And then a year later, the financial system crumbled because of all these mortgages that were packaged together and sold as bonds around the world. And all these people were defaulting and just stopping to pay their mortgages and not even leave. And some of them were leaving. They were given the keys to the bank. Others were just saying, we're going to stay here until you get me out of here. And every time I see them now, because I ride bikes with them, I just smile, and we never talked about it again. Slide number 29. Should I refinance? Well, when interest rates trend lower, many homeowners consider refinancing their mortgage and getting a lower interest rate. Payments usually go down as a result, but you can incur points and closing costs all over again as when you purchase the house. Because what you're doing is you're essentially selling your house back to yourself, if that makes any sense. I'm not a lawyer, folks, I don't know, but that's what I'm told. The rule of thumb is, if you can get your rate down by 2%, go ahead and refinance. But the problem is, you have all these closing costs. And you're going to take a look at the points versus interest rates document on the website. So what if you could go out and get a no cost or a low cost refinance? Some of these, you have to pay $300 for the appraisal and $50 for the credit check. And that's it. Now you're going to pay a higher interest rate, but what do you care? It's lower than the interest rate you're paying now. So even if you can get it down by, you know, 0.5% or 2% or 1%. Go ahead and do it. It makes sense to refinance, in my humble opinion, instead of paying $4,000 or $5,000, $7,000 to get a better interest rate. Now, this is your decision, but do look at that rates versus points, and you'll see what we're discussing, what the two opposing ideas we have. Paying a higher points, higher closing costs, getting a lower interest rate, or paying very little costs, no points, getting a higher interest rate, but still bringing down the interest rate from your previous loan. Slide number 30. The closing costs. And why do we call them closing costs? Because you close your eyes and snow. I know. That's the way you feel. You just want to go. Oh my, wait till you see how many documents. There's 120 sheets, and you have to sign or initial everyone, and there's a notary there, and there's people stamping it, and you just, what is all this stuff? Well, blame the lawyers, folks, blame the lawyers. But remember, before there were lawyers, it was pistols at dawn. Title insurance, what's that? We got a separate slide for that. Very important you understand what title insurance is. Escrow fee, these are the bean counters. These are the people who
do all the paperwork and get everything, make sure that everybody gets paid correctly and the money goes in the right place. The attorney's fees, as we said, in some states, you bring an attorney to the table. In California, it's not customary, but don't think you don't have, you can't do it. You can do it. You just got to pay the attorney. The appraisers, some of these people are real little Hitlers, little dictators, and they just, they I think it goes to their heads. And others are trying to be responsible. Some of them were complaining that in the run up 2006 and 7, they were saying, but these houses aren't worth this much, and they were getting yelled at and screamed at by their supervisors. So they said, all right, what do we do? Well, if everybody, this is what people are paying. And then when housing prices were going down, they were being yelled at and screamed at when they would appraise them really lowly because market prices were going down. They said, but this is what people are paying. And then they were getting yelled at and screamed at again. So some of the appraisers, you know, the honest ones, they can't win for losing. The property survey, the recording fees, the transfer taxes, the credit report, the termite inspection, the lender's origination fee, that's the fancy term for the points. The taxes and insurance reserve, they're going to create what's called an escrow account, an account at the lender where you pay not only the mortgage, you know, the principal and interest, but you're also paying every month the taxes and the insurance, and they start with a certain amount. They call it the reserve. And then any prepaid interest you have to pay, and of course the real estate commission, which is normally paid by the seller, but you can negotiate that. Now, what's a walkthrough? If you've made any kind of deal with the seller, oh yeah, we want you to, will you throw in the washer and dryer? Will you throw in that chandelier? And the seller says, sure, I'll throw it in there. Yeah, we'll make it part of the deal. Well, if you don't check the day before or the day of closing that they kept that washer and dryer in there and it's gone, what are you going to do? Oh, we're sorry, the movers by mistake, they took the washer and dryer. It's on its way to Bremerton, Washington. So you make sure that they don't stiff you, the things that they said they were going to stiff. I could tell you a little. I won't. Anyway, slide number 31, title insurance. Very important. Very important. Of course, the lender isn't going to even sell the place, isn't going to let you, buy the place and create the mortgage without title insurance. What does title insurance do? It guarantees that the seller owns the property. Wouldn't you like to sell something for $500,000 that you don't own, if you had no scruples? That the seller and the buyer are who they say they are, that there are no liens or other encumbrances on the property. You get the property and all of a sudden you find that, hey, this property has a $50,000 lien, which means somebody owes somebody is owed $50,000 and the house is what is securing that debt. The title insurance company makes sure that doesn't happen. If it does, it's their problem, not yours. If your home was purchased or refinanced within the past few years, you can ask for and should get a substantial discount on the title insurance policy. It definitely pays to shop around for title insurance, folks, because the prices are all over the map. It's unbelievable what some companies do. They throw a number up in the air and see who'll pay it. In some states, they require transparency and prices. I think Iowa is one of them. Prices fell. I forget the actual number. I got to go back and look research that. But they fell an outrageous amount percentage. So don't assume that the company or real estate agent suggests will give you the best price. Yeah, you can shop around and you should shop around and you should be able to get a discount, especially if you refinanced or the home was purchased within the past few years. Slide number 32. We've been discussing how to buy a home. Now let's take a look at selling our home. There's a wonderful book that we'll take a look at later on when we get to investments called Investing in Fixer Uppers. And he says, you're going to sell your house? Put up a white picket fence. You know, it'll cost you $2,000-$3,000, maybe more, $5,000, but it'll be worth $25,000. People love a white picket fence. I don't know. I couldn't care less. Where are you going to determine the selling price? Well, the appraiser will charge you an upwards of $350 now. It's going to happen anyway. The realtor will say, oh, we'll do it for free, because they want you to sign up with them, so they'll do an appraisal. But again, check Trulia, check Zillow, ride around on your bicycle for the neighborhood and see what others are paying. You can sell your house by owner, but folks, it's gotten really difficult. It used to be a whole lot easier. But I would get my real estate agent's license if I have to save $30,000 or $40,000. But I also have sales experience as a stockbroker, as an insurance agent. So it's tough, you know. All the documents you have to put together. Listing with a real estate agent is normally 6%, but they'll tell you it's negotiable. For you, we'll charge you 6%. Maybe today's special 6%. Yeah, they claim that they're not really a monopoly, but they do their best to hang on to that MLS and not let anybody else look at it. They hate Zillow. They hate Trulia. Keep your back to the wall when you deal with real estate agents. You ever see their pictures? That's the thing they click. That's the tick off. That's the thing that really shows who they really are, because they have these smiles. You can't smile like that. It hurts your face. But they, I don't know, they Photoshop it, or maybe they just, I don't know, they freeze their face to make it look. Anyways, continue at slide 33. What are some of the tax consequences of selling your home? Well, folks, the current laws are very favorable to home sellers. If you purchase your home and sell it for $250,000 more than you paid for it, that's a capital gain of $250,000. That's tax-free. Anything up to $250,000 if you're single, $500,000 if you're married. So you could buy a house for $100,000, sell it for $350,000 if you're single, and not pay a dime in capital gains. Sell it for $600,000 if you're married, and not pay any capital gains. And you could do this once every 2 years. There's some people who are still confused about the old rules back in the 1990s, but no, you could do this every 2 years. Some people think you can only do it once. No. Some people are doing this. They're buying fixer-uppers. Now, it's hard in San Diego because the competition is so fierce, but you buy a fixer-upper, you live in it for 2 years, fix it up. You know, normally you have a day job, too, and you're good with hanging drywall, fixing plumbing and the like. And then you sell it, no capital gains, taxes. Pretty darn amazing. If you lose money on your home, you cannot use that as a capital loss. You can't write it off. Why? Because it's a home first and investment second. In my humble opinion. Depends on who you talk to. Slide 34. Okay, we've gone through the home buying process, and yes, buyer's remorse is real, and oh boy, is it scary, and you're going to really be apprehensive and butterflies in your stomach, but wait till you see how much it's going to cost you. Because here we're going to learn how to do the mortgage calculations. And of course, the mortgage company, the bank, the credit union, they'll have all these numbers for you, and people are frightened. But at least here you'll be able to know them going into what you're getting into. And how do we do these calculations? Well, they're very similar to what we did in Chapter 1 with the future value tables. And some of you blew those things off and didn't even bother to learn how to use them. And I don't know what I can do to get you to do it. Jump up and down, scream and holler, stand on my head and spit wooden nickels. I don't know, but that's why we're here. If you don't understand them, you contact me. Every day you're studying, right? Of course you are, because you are awesome students. So you go to your bank, you go to your credit union, you go to your mortgage broker, and you ask for a loan, and they normally will show you a 30-year loan. And these days you get about 4.5%. It was a little less a while ago. This is still low by historical standards. So 4.5%. Now, how do we do these calculations? Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to bounce over to the mortgage amortization table, which is you know, in Canvas and on the class website in wonderprofessor.com. So here it is. Boom. We go over to 4.5% and down the 30 years. Now, you see this number right here, right there? That's the number. 4.5% down 30 years, 5.067. Write that down, okay? Because we're going to come back to it. Write it down. You got it? Or maybe copy and paste it. Because in the presentation, we see that we've put it right here. And what is that? That's the payment per 1,000. Huh? That means for every $1,000 you borrow, you're going to pay $5.067, right? But wait a minute, we're not borrowing $1,000, we're borrowing $300,000 or more, or less, depending on our first home. And so what we do is we multiply the $300,000 times the 5.067, wait a minute, it's per 1,000. So what you have to do is divide by 1,000. Now, you could actually divide by 1,000 using your calculator, or what I like to do is just cross off the last three zeros. Either way will work, folks. You decide how you want to do this. I think it's easier just to cross off the three zeros, but if you want to divide by zero, that's the divisions. I'm not trying to divide by zero. Divide by 1,000. You hit the divide symbol and divide by 1,000. And if you do that, if you multiply 300 times 5.067, you get 1520.10. $1,520.10. Which, you know, isn't really that much money in the grand scheme of things. Some people are paying far more than that in rent. Of course, if you go somewhere else other than San Diego, you're going to get a mansion for that. Here, you're going to get maybe a small house, probably a condo. And so, that doesn't include the taxes and insurance and HOA fees, if there are any HOA fees, and maintenance and utilities. It adds up. And so, how long are we going to make those payments? Well, it's a 30-year loan, right? How many payments every year? How many months in a year? 12. So 30 times 12 is 360 payments. So you turn to your spouse after your first payment and say, "Think, dear, only 359 more payments and it's all ours." Isn't that nice of the bank? They actually own the house. They just let you live there and pay the mortgage. And so how do we know how much we actually are paying over those 30 years? Well, you take the monthly payment of $1,520.10 and multiply it times 360 payments, and it turns out you're paying the bank $547,236. Remember, I told you back in Chapter 4 that when you grow up, you want to be a bank? Yes. But folks, I know there's lots of anger and all kinds of nasty things thrown at the banks. But without banking system, the modern economy, our modern society, couldn't function. It's that simple. But remember, we borrowed $300,000. So in reality, we're paying back the $300,000 plus $247,236 because you just subtract $300,000. How can we pay less? Well, let me tell you, if you can make higher payments, you go to your mortgage broker, your banker, your credit union, you say, you know what, what's the rate on a 15-year loan? And immediately they will drop it by 0.5% or more. And that makes perfect sense. Why? Because if they're going to keep the money out, if they're going to have the money out there lent to you for 30 years, there's a whole lot more time for things to go wrong than if they lend the money out to you for 15 years. And that's just a typical truism in the financial world. The longer you lend money out for, the higher the interest rate is going to be. So you might be thinking, wow, 15 years, I'm going to have to pay double. It doesn't work that way. We are going to get a rate of, say, 4%, maybe less if you look around, shop around, for 15 years. So let's go back to the table. Go across the 4%, down to 15 years, and there's the number we're looking for, 7.397. You got it? Now you can copy and paste it or whatever. Just remember it. Because then when we go back to the presentation, yes, there it is, 7.397. So we multiply the 300,000, again, crossing off the last three zeros or dividing by 100, times 7.397, and we get $2,219.10. It's not double. You might think it's double, but no, it's not. Why? Because the first several years of your 30-year mortgage, most of your payment is just going to the interest, and the principal is going down slowly. If you make a 15-year loan, much more is going to pay down the principal, and so the interest falls precipitously. 12 months times 13 years is 180 payments. Well, that makes sense. It's half the years. It should be half the number of payments. Multiply the $2,219.10 times 180 payments, and you get $399,434. So, $147,798, almost $150,000 less you pay in interest because you're paying off the mortgage that much faster. But it means you're coming up with an extra $699, $700 every month. And you can't just go to the bank and say, you know what, this month I don't want to pay the extra $699. It doesn't work that way. If you sign that contract, those mortgage docs, as they call them, you're on the hook for the full $2,219 every month. So what you could do is get the 30-year loan and then make additional payments, principal payments, to pay off your mortgage much faster. That's your decision. You don't have to get the 15-year loan, but many people do. And they say, you know, it's okay. I was paying, you know, a lot more in rent anyway, so I might as well pay more for my mortgage. Plus, I'm getting a little bit of a tax break now. You know, not a whole lot, but a little bit. You with me? You like it? I know it's scary. People, the first time they buy a home, they wonder if they're ever going to be able to make the payments, if they're ever going to be able to go out again and enjoy themselves. But every year, tens of thousands of people do it, couples. The fastest growing segment of home buyers, of course it's a small segment to start with, but are single women. Yeah, guys, you better be good to the ladies. You know, they're getting smarter. They're finally wising up after several thousand years of being, whatever, by men. Yeah. Okay, so now in the face-to-face class, slide 35, we would do the worksheet that's on the website that's in Canvas, and you should do that because it's basically the same, folks. Interest rates don't change that often, so you can imagine which interest rates we're going to see on the exercises and on the exam. Huh? Okay? Okay, good. Don't get too depressed. We are now ready to tackle my least favorite part of the semester, but a very important part, insurance. See you in Chapter 8 when we begin insurance, home insurance, automobile insurance, health insurance, life insurance. Remember, I'm an insurance agent, so I can say nasty things and true and nasty things about insurance agents. But don't worry, by the end of the semester, we'll insult everyone. Wait till we get to stockbrokers. I'm a stockbroker, too. Keep up the great work, dear students. We are so proud of you. You are awesome. Don't give up. Never give up.